Hi there, if you're looking to get started with a website of your own and a domain name, we've got good news for you. With our affiliate link with Kualu, you can click on that link which is in your show notes, which is for our affiliate link. You can go over to Kualu to get started with your website and domain name today. They've also got a very handy chat support system which is usually in the bottom right hand corner to send messages back and forth to Kualu if you'd like to ask them for help to get started with your domain name and website today. So that's Kualu, and you can use them to get started with your website and domain name today. Thank you very much to Kualu for this affiliate link. Hi there, if you'd like to get rid of the ads in Entertainment Talks podcasts and listen to the ad-free versions of our episodes, we've got good news for you there as well. You can subscribe to Entertainment Talk at either the $5 level tier or $10 level tier. The $5 level tier will get you access to all of Entertainment Talk's previous ad-free podcasts and the future ad-free podcasts that we make in the month that you're subscribed for. If you also subscribe to us at the $10 level tier, that will get you that benefit that I've just mentioned, and it'll also grant you access to request a review for 2 episodes of a TV show and a general discussion on that show, or a film review of your choice. So if there's a TV show out there or a film that we've not covered perhaps and you'd like our opinion on it, we can watch 2 episodes of that TV show or film review. So it's one of either of those per month. Of course, if you continue subscribing each month, you can pick a TV show, then a film the next month, and so on and so forth. This is a great way to support Entertainment Talk, get your ad-free podcasts, and also get some reviews of your choice. Thank you very much for supporting us, and thank you for listening. Back to the show. Welcome to Becoming Heisenberg. It's Entertainment Talks podcast for Breaking Bad on AMC and Netflix. I'm your host, Matthew. Joining me today, my co-host is David. How's it going?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Excellent. So we're here. We made it. Season 3, episode 13, full measure. It is indeed the season finale. We have 2 seasons left, although one of them is a longer length. What did you think of the season finale?
I love this episode. It was great. Mainly, I think, because of Mike. We got a lot of Mike in this episode, and I love that guy, and he's was wonderful in this. But I mean, across the board, it was just really wonderful. You got some great Jesse moments. You've got Gus and Walt together. As I said, a lot more Mike. You've got Saul in there. It's just there's some great moments across the whole thing. The story takes some really interesting turns. It's actually the first episode apparently to be directed and written by Vince Gilligan since the pilot. This episode, apparently, I was looking up. So you know, that shows what happens when the guy that created it can kind of search behind the camera again, and as well as writing it. So it's a really, really good ending to the season. This.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. Lots and lots of really excellent moments. Really great cliffhanger as well. I remember when I saw that when I was first watching this show. Yeah, it's a really, really good way to set up season 4 as well. So it's really, really good stuff. Seeing a bit more Heisenberg was really good. You really kind of see pretty much everybody apart from maybe Marie and Hank in this in this episode. You get Gus, you get more Gus and Walt. Do we call that Gus versus Heisenberg, or I suppose it's up to what you think, I suppose. But that whole dialogue exchange scene, I've talked over and over again this season about how good it is to get just Gus and Walt or Heisenberg in the same room, and you see what happens. But you get more Mike, which is really great, like you said. Some complicated situations going on. But no, it's a really, really good season finale. It's pretty much most of what I've got to say before we get into this recap. There's a lot of things to get into. Great to see Saul again. Like you said, there's a couple of characters that we've seen bits of, like Mike and
Sol particularly that we get to see a lot more of here. But we are getting to, well, episode by episode and whatnot, we are getting nearer to the end, so we are going to start ramping things up, or the show's going to start ramping up. So it's very, very good stuff. I don't know that I've got anything else for the pre-talk, so I think we'll move off of that, and we have a recap to get to and other stuff. So but it's a really, really great season finale, and leaves things in a very, I do quite vividly remember season 4, episode 1. I think it's, there's a few episodes in the show, it's probably like a, you can count maybe on two hands or something, those episodes you remember that really, really stand out. And as far as I remember, when we get the later we're gonna get into the show, the more I'm gonna remember maybe some of those episodes. But that was pretty good. So that's it for the pre-talk and stuff. We're gonna get into housekeeping and whatnot and all that. So we're gonna do that now, and we'll see you in a minute. All right, just mention one more time this season, because of course it is coming back in December. You might be wondering what that is. Of course, Classic Reviews. Last mention for that. For season 6, seasons 5, 1 through 5, and a bonus season already available for you to listen to. So if you want to get quote unquote sort of caught up for that, you can do that. I've been noticing a few more people checking out the podcast, which is good because again, you've got to remind people of the content that you make because that's how that works. But thanks everybody for checking it out. Thanks everybody for checking us out this season as well. And we'll carry on from there, I suppose. Other content that we've done recently. Myself and Gray went and reviewed the second season of Heartstopper. We were very, very in tune with each other in that podcast. We agreed on a lot of stuff. Sometimes that can be viewed as boring if you just agree with somebody, but it was agreeing with somebody and having a really great sort of flow with them. So that was quite a good episode to do. But that was Heartstopper season 2. We both agreed, let's say, on a strong must see review for that. That's got a spoiler free section at the start. If you want to check that out, and I assume we'll be back, me and him, for season 3 next year or so. Something they are writing at the moment, so we'll see how that goes. That's not affected by the writer's strike, is it? Because that's a British show, if I'm correct.
Yes, should
Cool.
be
I
so,
think so,
yeah, should
yes.
be fine.
Yeah. Cool, so there's that. Over in the United cast, a late dramatic, intense wins. Man United beating Brentford by 2-1. Scott McTominay with 2 goals in about a few minutes. Super sub situation. Header with literally like, no time left. And we love a late dramatic win. It's not the most ideal way to win a football game, but it's the most dramatic way to win a football game. There's no football at the moment, at least for Manchester United, until next weekend. Next Saturday, there's obviously all the England and international stuff, so there's that at the moment. But we'll be back soon against, I think we're away to Sheffield United in a couple of weeks' time or so. So look out for that. Of course, we've got last week's podcast for Breaking Bad, the penultimate episode. Over on Diabolical 7, my continued coverage of Gen V, The Boys, Prime Video spin-off, Season 1, Episode 4. I was informed by the internet that that is not called Think Brink. I didn't scroll down far enough in the episodes list. That was the name of episode 3, but that's still my podcast for season 1, episode 4, and of course episode 5 will be out later today. Already on episode 5 of 8, it's gonna just fly by, but you start with 3 episodes, so that's how that goes. Which one had you seen up to? Was it episode 5?
Five or six, I can't
Okay.
remember. I need to go and check. Because there's a couple of shows. There's that and Lower Decks, which I need to make sure I jump back on because the last few episodes for the both those we were given previews, but not the last few episodes of it. So I need to make sure I jump back on them and they kind of catch up to the right point. So yeah, both those shows, Lower Decks and Gen V, I'm definitely gonna be catching back up on because I thought Gen V was great and Lower Decks is great as well. But yeah.
Cool. So that's those shows. I don't have a podcast for Lower Decks, but that's of
No,
course
I
what you were
know.
bringing up there. Both Prime Video shows, so you can go and watch those. Over on Gaming Talk last week, which by the way, we'll be doing one today. We like last week we talked about Call of Duty Next, which was the odd live stream that they did to I would call it giving us new information about Modern Warfare 3, but they didn't quite do that. They sort of really went on over and over again about new movement and old maps. So it was a bit of a different stream to last year's one for Modern Warfare 2. But anyway, the beta has been out for a while and stuff. I have been playing it. I'll give my podcast thoughts later because I have quite a lot to say about that game. It's a annoyingly complicated and a silly situation. what's happened with that game? We also talked about Spider-Man 2. It's got a cool little sort of, not launch trailer, but like a story trailer thing. And we also talked about Factions 2 for The Last of Us. That's the online game. There was some new information about that. We also lost 3-2 away, at home to Galatasaray in the Champions League. We're not out of the Champions League yet. There's still three games to go for that. So I don't know when that's coming back, but I'll be continuing soon. Got to experience Toy Story 1 on the big screen as part of Disney 100. They're doing each week a new film is out. I think Frozen is this weekend's film, Frozen 1. So that was very, very nice. That podcast is not a review for the film. That's just talking about the experience and also just, you know, going through some of my favourite moments in the film, all that kind of thing. What else have we got? Yeah, that's pretty much everything we've been doing recently on entertainmenttalk.org and on podcast platforms. All right. I really like this flashback. In a flashback to 1993, also, side note, I was not yet born. but Man United did win their first Premier League, the first Premier League title. Yeah, because I remember looking that up the other day and I missed that one. Because I wasn't around yet, so that's a shame. Anyway, Walter and Skylar White are shown by a realtor to the house where they eventually will live. Walt, then working at the prestigious Sandia Laboratory, envisions a bright future with three children. They currently have two, correct? Yes, Holly and Walt Jr.
Yes.
And worries that they are not setting their sights high enough with the starter house. Most shows don't have this much that you can pull from a simple cold open. There's kind of a lot going on here. This is, first of all, it's a very different Walt. It's interesting if you look at, let's say, the three stages of Walt, right? You've got this one, which is clearly more confident. He's like, you know, much more happier. He's not in this like midlife crisis sort of thing. He's not sort of where he was at the start of Breaking Bad, which was like, oh, I'm a bit sort of like nervous and, you know, doesn't think much of himself and that type of thing. Also, he isn't clearly here being like overshadowed by his brother as well. If you remember the pilot episode, he was like, hey, I did this drug bust thing, and Walt's like, oh yeah, that's cool. And he was sort of, you know, he had that approach to it. Skylar does seem happier as well. I don't quite remember how happy she is in the pilot. Obviously they've all had development since the pilot episode. But him saying that, there's two interesting bits of dialogue that I picked up here. First of all, him saying to this guy, like, oh, I don't want to explain my job to you sort of thing, because it would bore you, which is sort of the sentiment that he gives throughout the current, you know, time season. Because like when you go back to that pilot episode, Hank's there bragging about, you know, the drug bust that they did. He's not there talking people up about science, and he doesn't really ever do that. And even his students themselves, you can see in obviously some of the scenes in the show, are a little bit bored, not because of Walt's ability to teach, but because they're, you know, kids that are bored in the class and he's just overqualified anyway. Him still kind of sticking to that was interesting, but he does it in a bit more of a, the sense I got from that was, I like my job a lot and I enjoy it a lot, but I don't want to specifically tell you about it because you might find it boring. And then the bit right at the end, he's kind of looking around, he's being a bit more picky, let's say, about, you know, oh, I don't know if there'll be enough space for this and that and all the rest. And then not only says this will be a good, you know, starter house, but says about setting his heights higher, which is, you wouldn't have heard him say anything remotely like that at the start of the show. Plus, obviously, they both look different. And interesting to just in general see them walk around the house all empty, obviously. That was very interesting. So there's quite a lot going on here, actually, if you think about it. What do you think of this flashback?
It's interesting to see where Walt's brain is at that point.
Yeah.
You know, because he's still working for this prestigious laboratory.
Was that Gretchen Elliot?
Yes, yeah,
right,
that's
right.
The company that he founded with Gretchen Elliot and then gets kind of pushed out of, you know, because the Walt we meet at the start of the series is somebody who's been trampled on a lot, you know. He's kind of been pushed out of that, and he's teaching because that's the only thing he can kind of do, and he needs the money, and that's the job he's kind of stuck with. The Walt we meet at the start is a very sort of downtrodden version of him, but this sort of younger Walt that we're seeing here is somebody who has hopes and aspirations and dreams, and where we meet him at the start of the series is kind of a lot of that has been knocked out of him, you know. The aspiration isn't there. He's just trying to get through day to day, you know, that sort of stuff. But the ego is still there, you know, the ego sort of saying, hey, we need to get something bigger, and, you know, we need to dream big. And Skylar's trying to temper that down by going, you know, well, this is what we've got in our price range, you know, and Walt's sort of like, but the future's bright, the only way is up, this sort of thing. So yeah, it's interesting seeing his attitude at that point. It's just a very different version of Walt. Apparently, I was reading through some bits and pieces about the episode. This is the only time, I think, in the entire run that we see Walt without a beard.
Okay.
So
interesting. Yeah.
He always wonders how they, when they actually must have filmed that, because obviously you've got to shave the beard off, and then they must film it like right before they go on a break. So, you know, they film everything else, shave the beard off, go on a break, like a Christmas break for like 3 weeks or something, or a month, so he can grow his beard back and then come back and film more, maybe. I don't know. But yeah, either that or they put a fake one on, but I suspect not. It is just very interesting seeing this slightly different version of Walt, who's sort of, you know, hungry and like ready to go for it. And the stuff about the job, I think, is partly the way I read it is not that he's worried about boring people. It's more a case of A, what we're doing is fairly sensitive, and B, you wouldn't understand it, so I'm not going to tell you. You know, I think that was more what I got out of it. It's again, it comes to this sort of, I'm not talking to a layperson about like this highly complex stuff that we do, which is very sensitive information anyway. So,
But no, it's interesting to see him be this, probably the most confident you're ever going to see Walt, at least, in the show. Obviously, Heisenberg takes off a bit later. But yeah, there's a lot you can dig out from this scene, which is very, very good. I initially wondered, now I couldn't remember where this was placed, and I'm not gonna give context for spoilers. There is another time that you do see the White House empty, and I wondered if this was gonna be that, and then I realized straight away that it wasn't. I think that scene is coming up later, but it's a different sort of thing. I mean, me saying that you'll see the White House empty again is not a spoiler in any shape or form, but I thought it was going to be that one, and then I was like, oh, it's this one instead. But I didn't remember how many times we saw the White House empty. It could even be three. Maybe there's another scene that I'm not actually remembering, but the one that was on my mind wasn't this one. So, but good stuff. In the present, back to being modern day Walt. In the present, after Jesse Pinkman goes on a run, Walt meets with Gus Fring and Mike Mantrout to negotiate for his safety and Jesse's safety. Sorry, for his and Jesse's safety. Walt pleads Gus to tolerate the incident Tolerate's an interesting use of word, isn't it? Interesting sort of choice of word. To let him return to cooking and agree to forget about Jesse. Gus accedes, but informs Walt that he'll be choosing Jesse's replacement. I love these sort of classic. There's always these classic tense desert scenes with this sort of underlying music going to it. This sort of like, I don't know how to really even describe it, but this slow sort of dramatic music. I'd say this is maybe the best scene of the episode, but there's a lot of really good scenes in this episode, so we can, you know, figure that out as we go. Not that we have to pick one, but it's one of the better ones. But this is, again, another one where, again, I still maintain Breaking Bad's the best show I've seen. When it gets to rewarding you, not really even rewarding you, because every episode's great, but rewarding you more, let's say, with, we've been building up these bits of plot lines, whatever they may be, and here's where it's not necessarily going to conclude, but push forward a lot more. And Breaking Bad rewards you the most for that, particularly obviously when you get to the finale and everything is all wrapped up. Couple of bits I really, really love here. I love how, because Mike calls him and he's like, hey, how do I know that, you know, if I come over there, you won't just kill me? And he's like, hey, if I wanted you dead, you'd be dead. Now, it's important to remember, it's not a spoiler to say that Mike's in Better Call Saul, I don't think so, anyway, because that takes place before this.
That's fine.
And we also know he works with Gus already. I don't remember him using it much in Breaking Bad, but he uses a sniper on a couple of occasions on Better Call Saul. And,
yeah.
Again, I can't. He hasn't used the snipers in Breaking Bad up to this point so far. I can't remember if he uses one later, but he's very, very good with one. And I kind of just imagined, yeah, he probably could just, maybe not even with a sniper, maybe with something else. Maybe Mike's got something different in mind. But I kind of imagined what once he said that, of Mike just sitting there watching with a sniper or something, and just saying, you know, you don't have to come. I don't have to wait for you to come all the way over here. If I want to kill you right now, I can just probably snipe you from all the way over here.
Yeah,
which was good touch. That wasn't what was implied, but that was what I was thinking of.
Yeah,
even simple things like,
well, I would say that is what was implied.
Yeah,
because I mean, the lines that he goes is, I'm gonna need some assurances, and Mike's. It's the way it's written is beautiful though, because it's, I assure you, I could kill you from over here, if that makes you feel any better, which is just great. And I think it is rather implying that Mike, if he had a sniper rifle, could have just taken him out from that distance. And we know he could have done it as well. If you've seen Better Call Saul, you know that's possible.
So good stuff. Then just this part of him walking over and how dramatic that is and everything. From the writing, the dialogue and the performances, and even like the directing and camera work, this is just top tier, like absolutely top tier.
Yeah.
And even things, again, as simple, I know I like to praise it a lot, it's probably one of the best parts of the show. Just the way the camera cuts back and forth, now this time between Heisenberg and Gus, and you have these, you can see how they're sort of choosing their words really carefully, like words like tolerate, you know, not forgive or forget or something like that, but tolerate. And because Walt, or Heisenberg here, knows that Gus is a man who, he himself is very, very careful with everything that he does, not just the words that he chooses and how he negotiates. But yes, it's very, very kind of, obviously ballsy from Heisenberg as well, because he literally does say like, hey, yeah, you could, you know, kill both me and Jesse. Obviously they know, he knows that they could track him down and everything. Is that, yeah, you could either just do that or you could do this other thing. And you can just see this look on Gus's face. It's just really great stuff. And then you've just got the observations of Victor and Mike, and they're sort of just watching these two do this, just like we are. It's really, really great stuff. Anyway, what do you think of this scene?
It's fantastic. I mean, the whole thing from Walt sort of just sat in the car waiting, and then you see the other car come across the other side, and it's beautifully shot. You then got that little exchange on the phone between Walter and Mike, and then Mike kind of walks over and pats him down. And they have that conversation about you said no half measures, and Mike's like, yeah, funny how words can be open to interpretation. You know, it's just the dialogue is so well written in this scene, and it's acted brilliantly. The negotiation between Gus and Heisenberg Walt at that point is, you know, the way that Gus starts out on the attack, sort of asking how Walt is, because, you know, he's assuming that something is wrong with his health, because that's the only reason he could think of for, you know, Walt doing something so monumentally stupid. And just the negotiation between the two of them is really, really good. It's a beautifully played scene. It's really nicely shot. The fact that it's done out in the middle of a desert as well, and it's really, really wonderful. I just love that scene. I think it's so well put together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Vince likes his deserts, doesn't he? Better Call Saul as well.
But there's a lot of it around that area. So,
yeah, you know. Yeah. Fair enough. Also, the nature of what they do, deserts would be used a lot. So, because very quiet and no one's really around. So, I wonder actually, you know, because Vince is doing that show on Apple with Rhea Seehorn, isn't he? I can't remember what it's called or what it's about, or if we know either of those things.
I think we've got a name for it yet. It's not related at all to the Breaking Bad universe.
I think it's
slightly sci-fi, but it's sort of, I don't, not an alt history sci-fi, but it's one of those sort of things, are it's our world but things are slightly off sort of thing, but we don't know exactly what it's about.
For those of you who might not know why it's interesting that he's got Rhea Seehorn, for those of you that haven't seen Better Call Saul, we're not going to talk about her role too much in the show, but she's excellent in the show and plays one of the most important roles, and the very prospect of, not that it was a problem what they were doing on AMC, obviously, you know, AMC's got their barriers and their problems, but that wasn't where it sort of came into place. But them going over to Apple, and you've got Vince, and you've got just the words Apple, Vince, and then Rhea Seehorn, is that's already, it doesn't matter what it's about, that's going to be good no matter what.
Sold. Yes.
Yeah. So we'll see what Sammy deserts he has in that show.
maybe he's chosen to go somewhere cold for a bit, you know, I don't know.
The next day, Walt arrives at the lab and discovers that Gale has been reinstated as his partner, and Victor now supervises is a choice of word, more like watches them like a hawk. Them constantly. That evening, Gus visits Gale at his apartment and informs him of Walt's cancer. Gus tells Gale he must learn Walt's method to prepare for the worst case scenario. Obviously this is a temporary placement for Jesse, so he knows what's going on there. It was interesting how relatively cool, calm and collected Gale is, but he's probably just happy to be back here with Walt, because we know that he liked working with him before. So that's interesting. Obviously this picks up more a bit later on. It's just a sort of introduction scene, but they shake hands, so things are good between them. Do you know the name of the actor of Gale? Because I've seen
David
him in a couple.
David Constable, I think his name is.
Okay.
He is probably better known these days for playing Wags in Billions, because that's a leading role in that.
Yeah.
He's David Constable, who is the guy that plays Gale. He is a phenomenally good actor, and he's wonderful in this. And you do feel kind of sorry for Gale, because he's to do a job. He's fun, he's happy, he's, you know, yes, he's cooking meth, but, you know, he explained his reasons for doing it in the previous episode, a few episodes ago, and he's being used very much so by Gus in this, not by Walt, really. I mean, you know, he's, Walt sort of got him out the way. But now he's back. But Gus is very much using him, and sort of, yeah, because Gus lies to him about the situation with Walt, because they know Walt is perfectly okay, and his cancer isn't back, which is an interesting bit of writing as well, because that's one of the clever things about the way that Vince writes these episodes, because you've got that reference to Walt's health in the previous scene, which is seemingly just used as a sort of way for Gus to have a go at Walt. But it also then reinforces this point here where you've got Gus going to Gale and saying, oh, his health is getting worse. Whereas we know for a fact that Gus knows that isn't true and that Walt's perfectly fine at this point. And he's just using this as an excuse to, like, wants to know really when he can kill Walt so Gale can take over without, like, missing a beat in terms of cooking the meth. So it's an incredibly well-crafted bit of writing, that, of just in terms of the structure. So there's that, and you do just feel very sorry for Gale, because he's like, you know, listening to this weird music in his apartment, and then gets this knock at the door, and he's very surprised to see Gus there, and he's obviously terrified of Gus, understandably, and that as a character, he's played, David plays it so wonderfully, and it's. You can see why he's gone on and done other things as well. He's just great character there.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Interesting side note, actually. Both Victor and Mike, this episode is the first time either of those characters' names are said on screen. Despite the fact they've been in multiple episodes before this, nobody's called Mike on screen, and nobody called Victor on screen until this episode.
Huh.
Which I hadn't noticed, but yes, apparently that's one of the weird facts.
Hmm. That's more noticeable with Victor, because he's not quite... even though Mike isn't in this regularly at this point, Victor's a little bit more in the background, but yeah, that's an interesting note. Yeah. I mean, Mike's been in, up to, again, this point in the series, he's been in three, four, maybe. If you don't count, like, that little hospital cameo thing and that type of stuff, he's been in, like, a handful of them so far. So, yeah, what I was going to say is, like, again, Giancarlo here with this David person, the way they exchange dialogue here is really, really great, and obviously you can see what Gus is trying to do. It's interesting as well, obviously, with I think they showed on the clock it was like 8:30 or something, so just like a casual sort of evening, and he's got this music on and he's watering his plants all really innocently, and there's all this sinister stuff planned behind his back and all this sort of thing. It was interesting you noted there that him being afraid of Gus. He's certainly, at least, you know, very, very nervous of him and nervous of the situation and stuff. One note towards that as well, he kind of, because slowly but surely, Gale gets the message from what Gus is trying to say. And this reaction from him of like, oh yeah, you know, a few more cooks, I think he says 2 or 3 or something, and then Gus just, he doesn't really change how he looks at Gale, but he sort of continues looking at him, and he's like, one more, he sort of just, there's that little, there's a little flick, there's a little change from him, of, because you could, yeah, you can kind of tell from Gale, he's thinking, okay, Gus wants me, there's a time strain here, at least that's what Gus is trying to imply to him. So just the way he says, like, oh, you know, what, one more before, no, I don't need 2 or 3, I need just, you know, one more. That's a good little sort of note in there to kind of see where both of these two are at in this situation. Obviously, the situation is very new to Gale anyway. And I love how, because Gus doesn't go over here and sort of, well, he doesn't have a Heisenberg name. Obviously, he's just called Gus throughout the series. He's not in, he's in chicken shop owner sort of mode, where it's all calm and sort of everything's relaxed, everything's totally fine. He does, like, not raise his voice, but sort of push things a little bit. There's like that extra little bit from him, but overall, it's this kind of, I'm going to be very calm here with Gale. I'm going to just really gently tell him that, you know, try and, I guess, assure him that he's got my trust and things. That's kind of important here as well. Because he's essentially trying to say to him, like, look, I'm going to have to, like, hand all of this over to you. Can you do it? And there's no way that Gale comes away from here saying no in any way, shape, or form. No. So Gus plays this very, very well. And again, Giancarlo's brilliant in this scene, and just the way the whole thing's handled, I think, is really good. So there we go. Let me scroll down a bit. Mike demands Jesse's location from Saul Goodman. That was quite a funny scene. Refuses to cooperate. When Mike physically threatens him, Saul allows Mike to look at a notebook containing a fake address for a trailer park in Virginia. Later, Walt and Saul meet Jesse, who is hiding in a local laser tag arcade, because apparently Saul is obsessed with doing this.
Yes.
Walt informs Jesse of his situation, explains that when Gale is confident enough, apparently just one more cook, take over, they will be disposed of. They decide they must kill Gale and debate over who should do it. After Jesse says he's not a murderer, Walt says he will do the job, and Jesse only needs to find Gale's address. Later that evening, Jesse calls Walt and tells him the address. Even though with how serious this episode is, because you've got lots of intense negotiations in this, you've got intense conversations, you've got talk of murder, which isn't new for Breaking Bad, but still, in this context, it's a bit more intense. And then you've got this Saul scene, which is just really nicely placed. Again, it's not this like dramatic change of tone where the show is like flipping between different stuff. You know what the character of Saul is like. And Saul's approach to this and Mike's approach to this makes this perfect scene almost of Saul does just enough resistance here and comes up with this last minute sort of, hey, I'm going to just leave this notebook here for you. And yeah. Mike gets just angry enough to where, obviously, he doesn't shoot him or whatever right there and then. I mean, that'd be a bad idea anyway. But he notches up that aggression a little bit more. And even with Saul kind of giving in a bit, you've still got that really nice comedy angle. And, of course, it's really nice to play by Bob Odenkirk. So, yeah, Saul kind of, he does basically have to do this here. Obviously, it's a fake address, so he plays it well. But I really like where and sort of when this is placed in this episode, because it's right before things really kick off and get serious as well. Not that they weren't serious before, but it's really, really good. So let's talk about this Saul scene for a minute first. What do you think of that one?
I love this scene. I mean, two of my favorite characters, Jonathan Banks is amazing at the sort of grumpy, world weary, I'm over this shit. Sort of, you know, he plays the character of Mike so well, but he's just so funny. I mean, again, the writing is superb. You know, because he's sort of trying to get the name, and Saul said, he talks about, you know, attorney kind of client privilege, and if I give up the name to you, what are people going to think? So where's the trust? And Mike's response to it is, I trust the hole in the desert I'm going to leave you in, you know. So it's just a great line. And like Saul say, yeah, that's an argument. And it's the way Saul just talks to him, like, Saul, don't make me beat you until your legs don't work. Tell me where to find him. it's really beautifully written and really funny. And just the two of them, because it's interesting watching this scene, having seen Better Call Saul and all the stuff they went through in that well, you know, so we now know they have this long history, and it does still sort of play like they've known each other for quite a while. It's interesting watching the scene, obviously, which was filmed before they did Better Call Saul, but it does still work that there is that sort of relationship still between the two of them, and it does sort of still make sense. So because I was wondering, going back, knowing how closely that these two ended up working together prior to this, I did wonder how this would play out, but it does still work, which is good. But yeah, it's just a great scene. Jonathan is fantastic as Mike, and you know, Bob's obviously brilliant as Saul, and it's just funny and well placed in the episode before you get to the much darker stuff that comes later. But yeah, it's such a wonderful scene.
I think I've mentioned this before, but it is very interesting knowing that whether it was being brainstormed or whatever at the time, the knowledge of seeing Better Call Saul didn't exist at this point because they were still trying to do Breaking Bad, but the knowledge of the full story of Saul, and then you see him in this show. I think I mentioned it when like he first pops up, and there's a few interesting little notes of different things. But yeah, I guess sometimes prequels can work in those sorts of ways. It's like I said before with when I did that Snyderverse run for the big podcast thing I did, and I decided to go Man of Steel, then Wonder Woman, then BVS, because I wanted to see what it would be like to know her story before she pops up in BVS, because obviously that wasn't the case in the real release. Then I jumped into Snyder Cut afterwards, and you sort of she pops up even in that first little scene, and you know her story already. But of course, the original idea was obviously BVS. She sort of gets very spectacularly shoved in, but still shoved into that film. But then you kind of watch that before, so because I don't know. Try to think of other ways this works in other things. Because obviously you've got things like Star Wars as well, where you've got 4, 5, 6, then 1, 2, 3, and obviously you've got the Darth Vader part, which is pretty big in there. I've seen those films a few times. I don't remember if I've gone 1 through 6 rather than 4 to 6, 1 to 3. Because obviously if you've watched all of them anyway, you'd have the Darth Vader knowledge. I mean, most of the world does, but
yeah, I mean, but that's an interesting... The Star Wars ones is an interesting point. Off topic here, but Star Wars ones are an interesting point. If you're introducing your children to Star Wars, do not start at episode one, because it gives them a weird impression of Darth Vader. You need to start at episode four. You start with the original trilogy, because if you start at episode one, they know, first of all, they know who Darth Vader is, and they have a lot more sympathy for it. Because of the fact that they followed his story from episode one. So he becomes a slightly more quite a lot more sympathetic character by the time you get to episode four. So it not only kind of ruins the reveals of four, five, and six, it also very much changes the perception of a sort of in a child's brain of who Darth Vader is. So never introduce somebody to Star Wars by starting at episode one. You start at episode four, do 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, and ignore the others. Because they're not great. I mean, yeah. But yes, certainly with those six movies, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, if you're introducing somebody after that, you can start at the beginning and go through it. But don't watch them for the first time, starting at episode one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you think of the Walt and Jesse scene here?
The Walt and Jesse scene? Yeah, this is sort of interesting. Kind of back and forth between the pair of them. They're sort of talking about killing Gale, aren't they?
Yeah, who should do it? How are they going to get the information? That type of thing. Yeah.
So yeah, it's because they're at the laser tag arcade, and yeah, discussing about Gale taking over and. Whether Jesse should do it or Walt to do it, and Walt sort of is perfectly okay as being the one to take the job on.
Do you think that's because I can't remember if it's in this scene or an earlier one or both? He says to Jesse, like, "You're not a murderer." Do you think following on from when, because he's the one who ran over the two guys and shot the other one? The one that was still hanging on. And I wonder if it was. So I can't recall if has Jesse shot anybody yet? I don't think so. No. Not that I can recall. Even with those two really bad parents, they sort of let them, say, take care of themselves, sort of thing. I wonder if with Walt here. Now, he doesn't really say it, but I wonder if he's thinking, okay, I've done this once to sort of save Jesse. You kind of go on the run or whatever, and I'll put the weight on me. But he's also got a little bit of, not quite as much as he usually does. He's got a bit of this sort of, not the silent guilt. You know, when he's sort of like, when you've got, let's say, Gus talking to Marie, and obviously Walt knows what's happened with Hank, and Walt's just sort of sitting there in the corner because he knows fully what's gone on. Not that type of thing. But Walt's got this interesting look to him of this, almost this guilt of like, I basically have got us in this situation, not because of something he specifically did, but because he kind of, you know, he started this whole thing and all that. And because they're both thinking quite big picture here, which is understandable. They're even talking, I think it was, is it Walt that brought it up? About, I can't remember which one of the two of them it was now. One of them says about going to the cops, and the other one says, oh no, that's a really like...
Jesse, you know. Jesse is actually, because it's Jesse the one that
says,
we should, you know, I can't believe I'm saying this, but we should go to the cops. This is, you know, basically, it's gone too far. You know, we need to go and turn ourselves in. And Walt is obviously against that because he doesn't want, you know, that will blow up everything. So, and I think the reason that Walt is agreeing to do it is, you know, Jesse is saying, you know, he's not a murderer, and I think you're right. I don't think Jesse has actually killed anybody up until that point, at least not directly. Whereas Walt has done it at least, Walt's done it twice, because he killed Crazy Eight, didn't he?
Yep.
In the basement, and then.
Gosh, that was a while ago now.
yeah, and then he shot the dealer, and ran over the dealers and shot them. So, I think Walt at this point is like, well, I've already done it twice, so you know,
he is taking that weight, isn't he?
Yeah, and I think he understands that, you know, he doesn't. Yeah, he doesn't exactly want Jesse to do it if he can find a way around it. But Jesse does also owe him as well. So there is a certain, I think this is, you're seeing very much the sort of Walt Heisenberg sides battling within Walt at that point.
Yeah.
Because if that had been pure Heisenberg, he would have been, you know, I saved you, it's your turn to save me, you do it. Whereas I think this is more Walt's rather more understanding of like wanting to protect Jesse at this point. You know, because he has become very protective of Jesse. So it's a very interesting relationship between those two. And yeah, almost sort of father and son relationship that you have. Well, I mean, very screwed up father and son, but father and son relationship.
One interesting note to connect to this, I suppose, which I meant to bring up earlier but forgot, but I can talk about now. Gus says to Walt when they're, you know, they're doing the desert negotiation, if you want to call it that. and because Walt, not Walt, Gus says to Heisenberg about like, you're protecting the junkie, because that's still what he sees Jesse as.
Yeah.
And so you got that kind of going on, and yeah, so where that kind of connects to this with kind of, he's still protecting him, and obviously Gus doesn't basically care about Jesse. He just sees Jesse as like, okay, you're just the one, you're replaceable, because obviously he's got Gail, but then he wants Gail to, it turns out, take over the whole thing. I found it interesting to connect to this because even though obviously Gus isn't in the scene, it's Walt kind of doing exactly that. Not protecting a junkie, but protecting his partner, because that's who he sees him as. Obviously Gus sees him differently. It's him kind of doing that, and I found that was interesting to sort of connect to the earlier bit. Let me just double check I'm on the right paragraph. Gail's address. Yep, tells him the address. Yep, on the right bit. As Walter's leaving his home to kill Gail, Victor arrives just in time and claims there is a chemical leak. Is there really? At the lab. Walt suspects a setup. I think everybody
suspects
does.
A setup.
Yep.
Yes.
But is forced to go with Victor. Upon arriving at the laundromat, Walt sees Mike confirming his suspicion. It all looks very intense. Pleading for his life, Walt offers to give them Jesse. Mike demands Jesse's location, but Walt says he needs to call him and set up a meeting. When Jesse answers the call, Walt tells Jesse to kill Gail before Victor and Mike can wrestle the phone away from him. When Walt quotes Gail's address to them, they realize he has told what he has told Jesse to do. Victor hurriedly leaves. We don't see him again after this. Mike stays with Walt and attempts to warn Gail, but Gail does not notice his phone ringing. It's on vibrate or whatever, and he just doesn't notice it. Then Jesse arrives at Gail's house and pulls a gun on him. Gail begs for his life, but tearful and shaking Jesse does pull the trigger. We will talk about that particular little part in just a moment. Obviously, we know Walt wasn't going to do what I'm about to describe. What do you think Victor does if Walt walks back into his home? But he's probably not. He's never going to do that. But I wonder sometimes in these scenarios, Victor has got him, because like Walt's about to get into. It's the white silver sort of one, isn't it? That's Walt's car. I think the other one is Skylar's. He's in between the two. He's about to get in the car. We all know, and he knows, Walt isn't going to go back into his home. But I kind of wonder what Victor would have done. Let's say like Walt started, he probably would have pulled out a gun, or I don't know, chased him down or something like that.
Yeah, I think he probably would have pulled a gun out and forced him into the car. But you know, I think that's only going to cause a massive scene, and
Walt knows that. Yeah,
and Walt knows that, and Walt has to be careful, because bearing in mind they are in the middle of suburbia there, and if he is seen and there is a sort of kerfuffle outside his house and some sort of scuffle there, and his neighbors see, somebody's going to call the cops, and that's the last thing that anybody wants, particularly Walt, because you know that's his family home, and you know, so he's not going to
be yeah
and then everything blows up, so he's not going to want that. So yeah, I mean, there was no option for Walt other than to go with them. But I love this exchange when they do get in there, and Walt, it's an interesting emotional ride for the viewer as well, because you're watching it going, oh no, Walt gave up Jesse. Oh, that's how weak is that? And then you hear him do the phone call and tell Jesse to go and kill Gail. And the reveal of that as well is with him giving the address to Mike and telling him the address, and you know, your boss is gonna need me, and like says, you know, whatever it's 635, whatever it is, and the look on Mike's face when he says the address, and the look of panic that they realize that this high school chemistry teacher has basically outplayed them, is brilliant. I mean, that it's such a good scene, that ending, and then when you cut across to Gail and Jesse, and that scene between the pair of them is just heartbreaking, because neither of them want to be there. Jesse's clearly knows what he has to do, but in no way wants to do it. And Gail's this sweet guy who's just pleading for his life, but there isn't any other option. You know, whilst Gail is alive, he is a danger through no fault of his own to Walt and Jesse. Because if Gail is alive, it means Walt can be dead. And if Walt can be dead, then Jesse can be dead. And so it's a really well-written, constructed situation that they've set up of the only solution really here is to get rid of Gale. And you can't just have him go on the run because he's not going to do that. The only thing you can do is shoot the man in the face. I mean, like, not necessarily the face, but I mean, you know, but it's a really tragic kind of heartbreaking ending because neither of them want to be there and neither of them want that situation. But it really is the only solution to keep Walt and Jesse alive.
It's again going back to the classic Breaking Bad thing of whether you think these are good people or not, but good people that are trying to be good keep end up having to do bad things because of the scenario that they're in, and it goes back to that classic gray area thing. But yeah, it's fascinating the way that the gunshot itself it depends on if at the time you think there is actually a gunshot that's happened or what you think, because the way it's sort of masked a little bit, I've seen this similar thing happen in other it's a bit more of a rare occasion. I saw it happen in thing like Telltale's Walking Dead. There's a sort of shot like that where you don't know exactly what has happened.
It's slightly different with this. I know the sort of shots you mean. Like, I mean, the classic example is the final shot of The Sopranos, without going into any details, is a gunshot over a black screen. And so you don't know who shot who. I think with this, it's fairly unambiguous that Jesse pulled the trigger because the shot is from Gale's point of view. The gun is pointed directly at the camera and you see the gun flash go off. So I would say in this particular instance, it's pretty clear that Jesse pulled the trigger. I mean, it's possible that he was aiming slightly behind Gale's head, but it is pointed apparently from Gale's point of view directly at him, you know, and that's the way the viewer sees it. It's not like it faded to black and then you heard a gunshot, which would be the other way of doing it. That's the sort of more traditional obfuscation way of doing it, would be you'd have Jesse holding the gun, fade to black, and then hear a gunshot. So you couldn't actually see who shot who or who shot what, because, you know, in that situation it could be that Victor somehow got there in time and shot Jesse. But yeah.
I kind of agree with what you're saying. The only caveat I would say, there's this interesting little sort of almost blur effect used over the, like, because you can see Jesse behind it in the shot, and obviously you can see him shaking still. You do hear the gunshot, but it's interesting the way, and I remember noting this when I first saw this, I don't know about the other times, but the first time and this time, there's this interesting kind of like camera blur over the gun that's kind of used, which just masks it just enough where even if you do think that he shot him, there's still that ever so slightly, because I remember when I first watched it and I wasn't sure, but then the thing at the time is I had all the episodes available and I can't remember if I watched the next episode straight after or what I did, but I had that option, obviously, you know, when the episode was going out, that was the season finale, that was it. But I think there's a very small question mark over it, and that the one reason I had that at the time when I was watching is because of that little blur over the gun. It just obscures things just enough to where, okay, you maybe think he has, you're sort of more than 50% sure that he has, but there's that slight bit of, it's not completely sort of there clean cut, so and I think that's interesting.
Yeah, and I think there is a certain amount of that from your point of view of going, of the viewer not wanting to believe that Jesse would do it.
Yes.
You know, there is a certain, I think there is also that going on of like, you know, so Jesse is on the, generally is on the opposite trajectory to Walt. While Walt is breaking bad, Jesse's sort of breaking good, or you know, less bad. I think is the, you know, Jesse's sort of rising while Walt is falling. That, you know, and trying to get out of, you know, going from drug dealer to trying to be a better person, whereas Walt is starting as a relatively good person and becoming a worse person. So you've got these sort of two sides to it, and I think this is a hiccup in that of like, but equally Jesse has been put in this situation of there really isn't any other choice for him, you know, because if you let Gale go and he finds his way back to Gus, they're both screwed and on the run. So you can really see the emotions running through Jesse's head. And I think as the viewer, you don't, yeah, with that final shot, I don't think it is that ambiguous, but you don't want to believe it, that he actually did it, even though I don't think he has any other option. So it's, I think there is part of that as well going on.
I don't have a ton to say about the Walt and Mike, and I know you spoke about it already. It was very, very good. It was a very good build up to what kind of happens and stuff. The line, like you mentioned a minute ago, your boss needs me, I thought was really quite good.
Yeah, your boss is going to need me.
Going to need me, yeah.
Yeah, it's the your boss is going to need me, why is that? And you might want to hold off, yeah, why? Because your boss is going to need me, and then reads out the address and just that look on Mike's face.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, of like, oh crap, they know where Gale is. Yeah, the look on Mike and Victor's, of panic on Mike and Victor's face is something that you don't see very often, and he's played so well. I mean, it did. I think across the entire episode, it's so well written. It's just crafted within an inch of its life, and the acting across it is superb. It's a really, really good episode, this one.
Yep, and that's it. That's the end of the season. We have a couple of bits of feedback to get to, and then at some point we will discuss it, obviously, later as well, as to when we jump into season four. But let's wrap this one up first. If you'd like to write in the meantime, either about this show or any of the other many things that we do, Matthew at entertainmenttalk.org, Twitter eTalkUK, and there's information in your show notes. Harrison writes in, says thanks for the coverage of the season, lads. Here's to whatever is next. It'll be sad when you do reach the season 5 finale. I remember thinking the same thing when I was watching the show.
Yes.
That, like, you have those shows now and again that you don't really want them to finish because you are just enjoying them so much. And the question now and again does pop up of, like, okay, whether it's games, films, or shows, if you could play something from a fresh or watch something from a fresh memory again, but have the same experience, but, you know, not be aware that you're doing that, you know, what sort of things would you do it with? I think a lot of people would, at least people that enjoyed Breaking Bad, which is most of the people that watched it, would probably choose that. But yeah, we'll get there one day. It's going to depend next year on, because we're pretty sure we got House of the Dragon. I imagine it's going to be latest by maybe summer or so, maybe even a little bit.
House of the Dragon, if they go back to, because bear in mind that hasn't been affected by the strike, so
yeah,
if they go back to their traditional release schedule, it's probably going to be spring, April-ish, which was always the Game of Thrones slot.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I no guarantee of that, but that is possible, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. What shows do we, so we got this, we got Last of Us, we've got House of Dragon. There's no way that Last of Us Season 2 comes out next year.
No.
In fact, I saw a photo Bella Ramsey posted out, who plays Ellie. She was doing some, like, training and stuff. So, and we don't... The other thing with Last of Us Season 2, and obviously we know there's supposed to be at least a third one as well, there's quite a lot of... I'm not going to get into it too much. There's quite a lot of casting that's got to be announced because there is quite a few new characters. And they haven't announced anybody or anything yet. So,
well, yes.
I mean, I know you could do that stuff, you know, can announce those things quickly.
To be fair, they probably would have announced that stuff by now, but they can't because the actors are still on strike. And
yeah,
it's not going well at the moment either. So that could go on for a while, yes. So, I suspect they probably would have made some announcements about that by now had the actors not been on strike.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think we expected that next year anyway, because they always kind of said 2025. Walking Dead stuff, that depends on where and when it pops up. I think I've spoken to you off the air with the two, because the Rick and Michonne thing's not till next year anyway. With the Dead City and with the Daryl Dixon, I still can't believe the show's actually called just Daryl Dixon. But you know what? What else?
Know your audience. Yeah.
Yeah. I spoke to you off the air about this. Was it with last week's Breaking Bad thing? Let's just say, just for example, let's say Amazon comes out with it. They haven't confirmed anything. I'm just giving an example. Even if they come out with the episodes weekly, it feels kind of redundant with those two shows to do those weekly, because it will be it will just be out of like time and a bit out of date and stuff. It's different with this because we're approaching this rewatch thing a bit differently. We'll do those two as probably just season reviews. Plus, they are only six episodes each, so it won't be as much to go through. But that's going to be, because that one of those maybe and hopefully could be before the end of the year, so we'll maybe get to one of those. It just depends on where and when they pop up. There's been like bits of information that we've got and stuff. I remember you said one of the shows was rated or something
somewhere. With the Walking Dead stuff, Dead City has been rated for release in the UK, like, because you know, the sort of PG-12,
They have to do
all that rating stuff. If something is going to be released, they have to submit it for rating in the UK. And Dead City has been submitted for rating. That either means it's going to be released at some point to be sold, as in, you know, go on to digital downloads on Amazon, or it is going to be sold as a series to somebody to actually broadcast. At the moment, we don't know, but it does sound like they are planning a release for that. And we have seen other AMC shows get picked up recently. So such as Interview with the Vampire, which is actually launching tonight on the BBC. It's probably on iPlayer already now. But we don't know anything about Daryl Dixon. We haven't heard anything about anybody actually picking it up from any of the shows of broadcast at the moment, which is weird given what a big franchise Walking Dead was at one point. And now, I don't know whether they're trying to charge too much for it. I don't know. I don't know why it's not, or whether they're trying to sell them all together, which would be great. I mean, if they could sell all three of the spin-offs into one place, that'd be wonderful. You know, like sell them all to Amazon Prime Video or Disney or I don't know. But no news at the moment on where they're going to land yet.
Yeah. So yeah, Last of Us in this more distant future. House of Dragons probably the next thing after maybe one of the Walking Dead shows. So we'll see how that goes. So that's where we're at with what we're going to be covering next. But yeah, one day we'll reach the season 5 finale. So... that'll happen when it happens. Caroline says, thank you for the podcast and look forward to other stuff. Thank you very much. How different did you find doing this show compared to the others? I think you mean because of the rewatch thing. When I pre-read this sort of yesterday, I was thinking about, like, because we do have different types of shows here, and we've got, I would say Classic Reviews is the most different thing I do to anything else, because the process of doing that is also completely different. It's a lot more sort of full on as well, but maybe that's just the way that I'm doing it or something. But you've got, let's say, like Last of Us, where, okay, I haven't seen the episodes because they're brand new to everybody, because it's a brand new show. But because I've played the games loads of times, I know for the most part what's going to happen in the story. Obviously, there's going to be bits and pieces that are like slightly shifted, and you know, that's where adaption comes in. And then you've got things like Walking Dead, where it's, okay, they essentially made like an alternate version that follows mostly the same path, but changes most notably at the end, but has the same checkpoints. You get different character deaths, things like that. But you still get, hey, here's this group, and then here's this group, and it still gets to its checkpoints, it just gets there slightly differently sometimes. And then you have this, which isn't based on anything anyway, but because we happen to have already seen it before, it is a rewatch podcast. It would have been interesting to see, not that it would have ever basically happened. But if we'd seen this for the first time, let's say after we'd completely gone through Better Call Saul, but that is just the way that works out with time, I suppose. It's an interesting one to do. It's just with... comparing those three, with Walking Dead, it was more, I feel like I know what's coming up, but it could be different, but we'll see how they adapt it. With Last of Us, it was the same thing, but with that, it was more about, okay, a CG / animated or whatever game that does have motion capture going on, but it's not real looking because it's a video game. Seeing that come to life and seeing what that looks like, which was the same kind of process for... let's say The Witcher. Obviously, The Witcher's material I don't know anywhere near as well as Last of Us's. I've not even read any of the Witcher books. It's just with that third game. That was, again, another one where it was sort of, with Witcher, it was, okay, I've played the game. I've seen the world in video game form. Now I'm going to see real people jump into the roles, like physically jump into the roles, like Henry and all the other people, and see what that looks like and see how they adapt it. But the difference there is even with going through the third game, I still don't deeply know the lore. Not that, you know, that's obviously a lot of stuff there with the lore of The Witcher. I don't know the books. I don't know the deep lore of it. I had just played the game once. But that was more about seeing that come to life still in that same way. But also then seeing, oh yeah, he's doing this and that, which I've done in the game. And, oh, here's this character and they're doing this thing and whatever. And then with this, it's just, we happen to have already seen it before, and we've landed on going through it. Otherwise, that would just be normal coverage for us, where... So that's the thing. If let's say we'd both gone through Better Call Saul the first time with its first run, which was what we... well, up to Season 5, which was what we did. Or Season 4. No, Season 4 was when we started weekly. And then we went through that with everybody, because that was the sort of live... viewing of that or whatever. I wonder what it would have been like to, let's say, finish... what was the last one? Was it Season 6? It was Season 6 for Better Call Saul, wasn't it? Because it was a season longer. Doing that and then jumping into Breaking Bad the first time. I wonder what that would have been like, especially for podcast covers and stuff. That would have been interesting as well, because we're jumping into this, having already seen it, but knowing Saul's full story, because we've seen Better Call Saul.
Yeah.
If we'd have done it the other way I just described, which is where we still know his story, but don't completely actually know the Breaking Bad version of him, because we wouldn't have seen it, and then jumping into that, that would have been kind of curious as well. Obviously, that's impossible for us to do, but how do you think this has gone compared to, like, let's say other material where you've been familiar with, let's say, the source material or something, like similar examples to where I brought up Walking Dead and Last of Us?
I mean, there aren't that many of the sort of these sort of recap shows that I do with you that where I know the source material, or we don't,
mm-hmm.
Cause like Game of Thrones, I never read any of the books before. I mean, Star Trek's one that I know more, but yeah, I don't do that show with you. I'm trying to think what are the shows have we done in terms of recaps. Westworld was, again, I mean, I knew some of the, I knew the film, but they're two very, very different things.
Watchmen was one that you knew more about.
Yeah, Watchmen, but again, the adaptation of Watchmen is so devoid of the book, brilliantly so. But because it's a sort of sequel, we take things in a very different direction. And again, it's a sequel in a sort of very alt universe version to how they continue the story in the comic books. So they're completely different things. For me, it's interesting going back over this because I haven't seen it in such a long time and I don't really remember exactly what happens. So although there are bits and pieces which sort of stick out in the odd scene and the odd clip and like, I hadn't remembered how this season ended. Exactly. I knew some of the beats, But I mean, my memory for exactly what happened on the show is not great, and so I remember enjoying it and I remember it being brilliant. But yeah, so it's one of those things. Going through this has been kind of fun because I don't actually remember exactly what was happening.
Mm.
So it's almost like kind of watching it again for the first time for me. But the interesting thing, I think, as you pointed out, the more interesting thing is going and watching this, having recently watched Better Call Saul and knowing the background of that character a lot more. So the interactions with Saul become rather more interesting because you know how he got to where he was. So there are interesting little bits to watch out for that. But in terms of the overall plot of it, I obviously know where it ends up and how it ends. But as to the exact points of like what happens where, and you know, like I remember the plane crash thing, but I didn't, you know, I remembered sort of how we got there, but in terms of, and I remembered the lab and Gale, but as to exactly how and where we ended up with this, that I hadn't actually remembered. So yeah, so it is interesting.
Yeah, I'm very, very excited to, let's say, jump into Last of Us Season 2 and then see, because I think that second game's even better than the first. Not to put the first one down, but it just accelerates things and whatnot, and to see that come to fruition. It'll be interesting with our future Walking Dead stuff, because obviously the comic book, like, it only goes that far. There is, like, a little Negan sequel thing, which I don't know how much of that they'll use in the Maggie Negan show, but that's new content, like the Rick Michonne stuff, the Daryl show, and the Negan Maggie thing. That's all original content, so that won't be a case of like, oh yeah, in two episodes Maggie and Negan will do this, because that's post comic book, that's post show stuff. So that will be interesting to see, unless there's little nuggets of things that like they didn't use in the book that they might use in these, because only, because there's, what, five characters in total, Rick Michonne, Maggie Negan, and Daryl, obviously not in the book. There's only one of those characters that is original, so you could still use little snippets of the comic book, but we're talking post-comic book, post-show anyway. So that's that. Lastly, Jack says, let me move my mouse. So Jack says, it was really awesome to see a bit more Heisenberg at the start. I can't wait to see him more in future episodes. Yes, like I said, you know, you don't just, you know, by the end of season one, let's say, oh, here's Heisenberg. It's called Breaking Bad. I'm not going to go over all that again, because I remember we talked about that quite a bit last time. The whole conceit of, you know, following the title of a show, for example, with Lost and all those sorts of examples that we gave before. It's interesting earlier in the show, though, because we see the costume of Heisenberg, I think, for the first time in, like, the season one finale. Because that's when, like, Tuco goes a bit mad for the first time, and they're dealing with him. But in no way, shape, or form is Walt anywhere near Heisenberg by that point. In fact, I remember in that scene, I'm bringing that up because that's the first sort of glasses and hat appearance, I think, at least, of Heisenberg. That is nervous Walt dressed up as Heisenberg, but I suppose he's doing that because he wanted to like hide his identity or whatever it was that he was doing at the time. And then you've seen bits of it now and again, and you've seen bits of that personality come through, like when he's talked with Gus. I'm trying to think, we've been through a lot of episodes, so my memory may be slightly foggy. Apart from this scene where he the one where he walks up to Gus here and he's like, okay, he's not got the glasses on, but he's got the hat on and he is in full Heisenberg mode. What the nearest scene before that was where he was Heisenberg, like dressed up, not just, oh, I'm going to chat to you as Heisenberg, but dressed up as him.
Yeah, I mean,
it wasn't sort of recent. So it's a rarer case, for at least from up to this point, seasons 1 to 3. But obviously it becomes a bit more regular as he does continue to break bad, which is, again, the whole idea of the show. So,
yeah.
But it's excellent and really exciting when we do see it. So,
yeah. I mean, it's interesting. The reason that he wears the hat, was, apparently a decision by Brian to protect his head after he initially had his head shaved. So that's the reason why he has the iconic sort of hat in the first place. It wasn't directly a kind of costume choice, but it does create that interesting sort of outline. Or I mean, that choice of that exact hat might have been a costume choice, but he I think requested a hat because he was didn't want to, because they were out in the sun, he didn't want his head burning now that they shaved it, which is understandable. So that's why he ended up with a hat. But the appearance of the actual costume in this, he's not entirely full Heisenberg at this point. It's more sort of Waltenberg. I mean, he's definitely not the nervous sort of playing dress up as Heisenberg like he was in the first, when we first saw it.
That season one bit, yeah.
Yeah, that season one bit. It's not really full Heisenberg at this point either, because I would say at that point, at this point, there is still a sort of some of Walt still milling around in there. You know, he's trying to sort of protect things, but there is an ulterior agenda going on there as well. So I still don't think he's entirely there at this point, but he's definitely further down the road in it. Mm-hmm. You know, just because he's in the outfit doesn't necessarily mean that it's Heisenberg, you know, as we saw. So, yeah. And again, even in Half Measures, when he runs over the dealers, there are glimpses of it, like when he actually gets out and shoots one of them. But he's doing that to save Jesse.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a sort of, it isn't as calculated. It's like, I need to do something, and it's not as planned and thought through. So, he's not quite there yet, I don't think.
Yeah, true. I've still got in my mind, there's a moment in a scene where I think he does break bad, and I can't remember, obviously this will be part of the journey, if he acts like Walt after the scene I've got in mind. I'm not going to say what it is or whatever, but there's, I think I've had that in my mind before. This isn't like a new thing of like, okay, because there's always a question and there's never a definitive answer, like, okay, is there a moment where you think that Walt broke bad? I've got one in mind, but I can't remember if he acts like Walt at all after that scene, but I guess we'll all discover that together. So, but there's no right or wrong answer necessarily. I mean, maybe if you say it broke bad in the pilot, then I'm not quite sure. But anyway, that's it for season 3. We'll be back. We'll put a pin in this for next year for season 4, because we don't know what's going to happen. We do not work for these studios, and we are not in charge of when things get released. We're also not in charge of when the strike ends or when a deal will be struck, because we're not involved with that at all either. So, but at least things are moving forward with that. Just to kind of address that a minute, obviously the writer's strike has had somewhat of a conclusion from...
Well, the writer's strike here has actually completely concluded now.
Yeah.
You know, the writers basically got pretty much what they asked for. They have voted to ratify it. They are now completely officially out of strike mode. They are all back to work, and the strike is over for the writers. The actors, not so much. They were talking again this week. That unfortunately he has completely broken down today, and or last night, and they are back to a stalemate, because the studios, by the sounds of it, are trying to pull the same stuff that they pulled on the writers that didn't work. So, I don't know what they're playing at. admittedly, the actors, I think, are asking for more than maybe the writers did. So, but I don't know. There are still particularly issues with AI, which they need to sort out, because that's quite serious. They are still insisting on being able to scan people and use them for the entire duration of a movie, which is ridiculous, or even a franchise. So So if you're Marvel, for example, what they're saying is if you were, even if you were a very high profile example, but if you were Chris Evans, you could have been scanned as Captain America on your first day on the job, and they could insert you into the background of every single scene of every single MCU project if they so wished. And that's what they want to be able to put in their contract. And quite rightly, the actors are going, no. That's an extreme example of it, but that is effectively what they're asking for, which is ridiculous.
So yeah, just to conclude, I guess that part of the conversation, hope that everybody can get equal pay. That's ultimately what people are kind of fighting for and stuff.
Yes.
Obviously, you don't want AI to be used in bad ways. So we'll see how all that goes. That is everything. Thank you all very much for joining us for this season. David, thank you for covering this season with me. We'll be back at some point in the future. In the meantime, you can find everything else that we do on entertainmenttalk.org for TV, games, films, Man United podcasts. So check out that stuff as well. You can support us either by listening to more episodes, there's a dozen of them on the site, you can look through different menus and whatnot. Word of mouth, social media, let other people know about what we're doing and where they can find it. Patreon, $5, $10 level tiers, every podcast review options, look for that as well if you'd like to. TV and film news, Geek Town Radio this week was a very, very big one. Geek Town Radio on Tuesdays, geektown.co.uk. David, what's going on over there?
Well, yes, as you say, Geek Town Radio was a big one this week. I had you and Gray on because it was our 400th episode. So we covered a lot of the usual stuff we usually cover on Geek Town Radio. So TV, film, gaming news, all that sort of stuff. We also did the Geek Master quiz as well, which we do every sort of, 100 episodes or so. Which pitted the pair of you against each other on your TV knowledge. That was very fun to do. That was on this episode this week. You can find that on geektown.co.uk and wherever you get your podcasts. It's pretty much everywhere. There's also quite a lot of news around at the moment about TV shows being saved and premiere dates for things and new stuff coming, and there's a lot of preview pictures and stuff for shows coming up, because whilst Hollywood may not be moving, there are a lot of big shows being made in the UK still as well. So there's a lot of stuff still out there. So you can go and check the website for all that stuff which is coming out and new releases and things at geektown.co.uk.
Excellent. So go check that out. Geektown.co.uk, Geektown Radio for all that good stuff. Yep, episode 400 was brilliant to do. And congratulations on reaching that number as well. It's quite a few episodes. So good stuff over there. You can find Bex as well over on Twitch and other platforms, Trista, B-Y-T-E-S, for all of her streaming. She's always busy doing lots of creative stuff, so go and support what she's doing. You can find me as well on Twitch if you'd like to, at eTalk UK and YouTube Entertainment Talk Plays. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.